Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hello and welcome to Politics War Room with James Carville, and I'm Al Hunt. This week, our guest is Congressman Brendan Boyle, the foremost Democratic expert on the budget. Remember, we love taking your questions, so write to politicswarroom@gmail.com or send a tweet to @Politicon for next week's show. Now, we're going to get to as many as we can, but don't forget to tell us where you're from. You can also get text updates about what's next for Politicon and Politics War Room by signing up at politicon.com. So tell friends about us and remind them to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast. Please check out the links to our sponsors, Fay Nutrition, Quince, and Delete Me, in our show notes. We thank you for supporting these sponsors because it helps make this podcast happen. Hey, James, the tragically sad saga of Joe Biden doesn't go away. He was diagnosed with severe prostate cancer. I think you should be in everyone's thoughts and prayers on that. The third book, this time from Jake Tapper and an Axios reporter, on his ill-fated decision to run for re-election. As in the other two, there are lots of interesting anecdotes in it. But the overarching picture, you know, we didn't really learn much new. It was what you talked about repeatedly. In 2023 and 2024, Biden was too old to run for a second term, slipping, and he threatened to take Democrats down with him. If he had gotten out in July of 2023, instead of being forced out a year later, just think. I mean, this is alternative history. He would have been treated as a hero. His legacy would have been cherished. There was a better than even chance the Democrats would have won the 2024 election. But he and his enablers, Mike Donlin and Steve Ricchetti and Anita Dunn and Ron Klain, they just wouldn't face, they had a massive delusion that he was the one that could defeat Donald Trump. In fact, he was the one who could not defeat Donald Trump. And also, I think the Democratic politicians are at fault. Some who knew that this was a guy not fit to serve for four more years, but they kept saying, if you challenge an incumbent, it's just going to help Trump. They too made a tragic miscalculation, James.
I cannot begin to express how tragic this is. So Joe Biden, on New Year's Day of 2024, stood as a titan of modern American history. When I tell you there are very few people that were all around the same age, you know, we'll just make the demarcation line to end of World War II, which seems to be a long time ago, which it is. He's one of the most accomplished Americans. If you just look at what he did as chairman of the judiciary, foreign relations, vice president, president, you look at the tragedies of his life and the strength that he's exhibited, and he's a well-liked, very admirable person. And he made one colossal mistake, and a Democrat's made a colossal mistake by going along with it, and that is staying in the race until July 21st of 2024. And it breaks my heart because you're right, and he's got, you know, this rather depressing diagnosis. You know, maybe hopefully they can deal with it. We all do, but it's still a certain age. And man, he should be enjoying. Okay, hard to enjoy anything when you got a prostate cancer of that magnitude. But it's just the whole thing. It's just so sad. And what made it so tragic is he's such a good guy. It was actually a really good, you know, one of the better first term presidents. You know, some people, I've heard people argue he did as much as 4 years. A lot of people didn't eight. But he's a man that deserved everything that we could give him other than re-election.
Sadly, it was self-inflicted, I'm afraid. Let me make a couple points, though. There is no evidence that that cancer was known about a year before, as Trump and some others have charged. He said he had not taken a PSA test since 2014. I frankly think that's foolish, but that's what the experts recommend. Stop taking PSA tests. I do not understand why. So I don't think they covered that up. Also, in the three books, they're devastating. I mean, he really had lost it. But I read all three, and I didn't find one instance where his cognitive slippage, caused a policy crisis where, you know, we did something that we wouldn't have done if we'd had a sharper president. I think that's important. Republicans will try to make a big deal out of that. And finally, James, I heard some pundits say this is going to be a big issue for Democrats in 2028. I think that's a long time away.
Yeah, I do too. And what people forget is Trump is going to be 81, assuming he lives, in his last day in office. And so as this heightens the whole cognitive debate or age-related debate, which I think is an important debate to have, it may backfire.
Yeah.
But it was a tragic thing. Jake's book, you know, brought more light to it. There are going to be so many books written on this. Shit. God knows what. And you know what happens? Every time you go further into history, you find out more.
Yeah.
Okay. We don't know. We pretty much know the parameters of what happened, but there are plenty of specifics left. Yeah. It's just the saddest fucking thing you can imagine. It's just the whole thing.
Hey, James, let's not forget, however, this week, the Trump clown show up on Capitol Hill. The Homeland Security Secretary, Kristi Noem, had no idea what habeas corpus was. She was asked, what's habeas corpus? She said, that's what allows the president to deport people. So basically what the founders in putting that in the Constitution were saying, we want to put that in because we want to allow, you know, the president, George Washington, whoever, to deport people. Wrong. But imagine, no idea. And then you had the IRS nominee, Billy Long.
He's a bunch of fucking fools.
The definition of a hack was asked by Elizabeth Warren, is it all right for the president to audit IRS audits of people he doesn't like? Billy Long wouldn't answer that question. First of all, he doesn't know, but secondly, he'll do whatever he's told to do. And James, I really believe this. I think that's going to happen, and one of the worst scandals and worst things in this administration is going to be the way they abuse the IRS to go after people they don't like and protect people they do. And finally, we had Marco Rubio, who has flipped one position after another, and there were some senators who said, I wouldn't have voted for you if I knew you were going to do this. The one thing I knew about Marco Rubio going in, that, you know, for some people find him quite attractive, he's weak. He was the prime sponsor of that immigration reform bill, bipartisan, back 10 or 12 years ago. And then one day he went and he did what they call a full Ginsburg plus two. He did 7 Sunday shows talking about what a great bill it was. He got some heat, and then he was the first one to back away. And we remember what Chris Christie did to him in that debate. So it is a collection of clowns.
Well, all right, let's talk about Kristi Noem and habeas corpus. First of all, not only does she not know what it was, she thought it was the actual opposite of what it actually is. So let's take this word. And is this some new finagled liberal progressive bullshit? You know, it was mentioned in the Magna Carta, which is something like, I don't know, 1250 or some exact date. All right. It was such a fundamental right. Understand, it was not in the Bill of Rights. It was in the original articles of the Constitution. It was such a sacred right. It was more than free speech and freedom of religion, the things that they had to incorporate in the Bill of Rights. All right? It is like fundamental underpinning of English common law and American law. And, you know, somebody that, like, has worked a lot extensively in Argentina, you hear a lot about the dirty war, you know, but any other totalitarian state, you just disappear. Just one day you're there, the next day you're not. But Stalin said, no man, no problem. So it's so utterly fundamental to the actual core of what our legal system is to what we are. That if you arrest somebody, you got to publicly tell them why they're arrested and what the charge is. You just can't go and snatch somebody out of bed and have them disappear and have their families worry where they are. She's so goddamn stupid. And the thing is, I don't think she even knows she's stupid. Okay, I really don't. I don't think she's, you know, one of the classic lines of all politics was there's a Klein line about Newt Gingrich. He was a stupid person's idea what a smart person sounds like. She is a stupid person who looks at the world exactly like a stupid person would look at the world, and she doesn't even know she's stupid.
God, you know, and her top advisor is Corey Lewandowski. How about that? Anyway, you're absolutely right, but the Democrats have their problems. Joe Biden certainly has his problems, but this really is a clown show.
He
may be the chief clown.
Joe Biden, I don't care what he say. He knows what habeas corpus is, and he could tell you right now.
Right, right.
Eat right with Fade Nutrition. You know, it's amazing when you tell people about the service. And, you know, the reason most people don't go to a dietitian because it registered dietitian costs money and, you know, when does it cover? And you just sitting there in the dark where this is a very affordable alternative that can give you rock solid nutrition advice. And, you know, the more that you see and the more you read, you know, healthy nutrition pays a big part of a healthy life. And this is something that was not available to the everyday man before. And now it's very available to anybody.
Yeah. And, you know, forget fad diets. What you eat is fundamental. It affects your energy levels, your mood, how well you sleep, and your long-term health. That's what's so great about Fade Nutrition. Fade connects you directly with registered dietitians, the real food and nutrition experts, for personalized nutrition counseling tailored specifically to you. The best part is that all dietitians on Fae take insurance, so 95% of people pay nothing for their sessions. Yes, that's right, $0. This podcast is sponsored by Fae. Fae matches you one-on-one with a dedicated dietitian who will help you understand your body's unique needs. Together, you'll create sustainable, evidence-based programs, not just quick fixes, to help you build healthy habits and achieve your health goals. So now we found out insurance can get you the dietary guidance you need. None of us have an excuse. Forget one-size-fits-all diet plans. Fae creates a customized program tailored specifically to you. And whether you're trying to lose weight, dealing with low energy, digestive discomfort, navigating food allergies, managing conditions like PCOS or diabetes, or you just want clarity and all the confusing noise, personalized guidance could be the foundational support that you need. At Fae, they believe expert nutrition counseling should be accessible to everyone. It's so simple to find a dietitian who fits your needs and to instantly check your insurance coverage before signing up. And like I said, the vast majority of people pay nothing for their sessions. I know for a fact that we all will find any excuse to avoid spending money. But James and I realized it was time to get our health handled as soon as possible. It used to be that having a personalized nutrition cost big bucks, but not anymore. Thanks to Fae. Listening to Politics War Room can qualify to see a registered dietitian for as little as $0. That's pretty little, $0, by visiting FaeNutrition.com/War Room. That's FaeNutrition.com/War Room. One last time, that's FAY Nutrition.com/War Room, and make sure you use our URL so they know we sent you. The link is in our show notes. Hey, James, we have the perfect guest for this week. the Pennsylvania Congressman Brendan Boyer, who is the top House Democrat on the Budget Committee, knows more about this big, beautiful bill probably than anybody. Congressman, let's just set the predicate with the Republican reconciliation bill. I'm going to ask you about three issues, and we'll return to every one of them. So just very briefly, does this really do anything to Medicaid recipients?
So this is the biggest Medicaid cut in American history. About 7.7 million Americans will lose their coverage, their healthcare coverage, due to the devastating Medicaid cuts that are in this bill. By the way, this number and any of the numbers that I'll cite, I'm not using my own. These aren't Democratic source numbers. These are from the nonpartisan official scorekeepers, the Congressional Budget Office. They verified last week 7.7 million lose their health insurance just from the Medicaid cuts. I assume we'll talk a little bit later about all the other people who will lose their health care because of other cuts.
And where, let's talk about the tax cuts for a minute. Where do most of the tax cuts go? Who are the biggest beneficiary of extending the tax cut?
Yeah, this is pretty extraordinary. And this actually has just come out very recently. The Congressional Budget Office released the distribution tables very late on Tuesday night, showing that it's not just the case that the top 1% gets the biggest bounty of tax cuts. The bottom 10% actually will decline in household wealth as a result of this bill. A 4% decline in household wealth will be experienced by the bottom 10%. So usually, you know, if you go back to the 01, 03 Bush tax cuts, you go back to the Reagan 81 tax cuts, typically it was the case that everyone got a tax cut. The bottom 10%, bottom 20% got a lot less than the top 10%, top 20%. That's not the case with this one. We are saying, and what CBO is showing, is that the bottom 10% of Americans will actually lose money as a result of these changes, with almost all of the benefits going to the top 10%. And of that, obviously, the biggest chunk going to the wealthiest 1%.
It's just extraordinary. What would this bill do to the deficit?
Yeah, I hear again, CBO, but also Moody's on Friday downgraded us as a direct result of our changing deficit and debt situation. The fact is dramatically getting worse because of this bill. It will add trillions more to our deficit and our debt, again, according to CBO, according to Moody's. And what's interesting is over the last couple of weeks, I'm sure have seen what has been happening in the bond market and the way mortgage rates have been going up, because we have now finally hit the point that international investors are demanding a higher interest rate to issue us debt because we just have so much damn debt.
Well, Trump says without this tax provision, there would be a huge tax increase that would drive the country into a recession. What's your answer?
So forget predictions. Let's look at just what happened the last couple of weeks. The first quarter GDP declined. You go back to January, guys, just 4 months ago, no one was predicting an actual contraction of our economy. Liberal-leaning economists, conservative-leaning economists, Wall Street, they all were saying we were going to be growing. The only difference was how much we would grow by. Well, it turns out we actually declined by 0.3%. It is expected that the next quarter's results, the quarter we're in now, will also show a decline, which literally meets the textbook definition of a recession, two straight quarters of negative growth or decline.
One more, and then I'll turn it to James. On Medicaid, the Republicans say, hey, you guys are exaggerating. No one's going to actually have their benefits cut. This is all about work requirements and rooting out waste, fraud, and abuse. So they're claiming, I think, there's no effect on nursing homes or rural hospitals or new births. Clarify what it really is.
Yeah, so their basic line, because I've spent a lot of time with them, we pulled an 18-hour markup last week, so I got to hear a lot of their rhetoric. And then just recently, all throughout the middle of the night in Rules Committee, so I have had a lot of time to sit there and listen to their rhetoric. What they basically say is, yeah, some people will lose Medicaid, but it's all because of waste, fraud, and abuse. And the illegals. And no legitimate American will actually see their benefits cut. It's BS. You know, Josh Hawley, and I'm not typically in the habit of quoting Josh Hawley. He knows this is a fraud. He wrote an op-ed, I think, in the New York Times or Wall Street Journal, in which he called this morally wrong. There have been other right-leaning groups as well who have called this out. Even groups, by the way, that are, again, actually for tax cuts. The fact of the matter is, and again, as CBO verifies, it's going to be a lot of people losing their health care. In fact, when you take the 7.7 million who will lose their health insurance from the Medicaid cuts, combine that with the 6 million Americans who will lose their health care because of the changes they're making to Obamacare, that's 13.7 million Americans in total. At no point in American history have that many millions of Americans lost their health care, not even in the Great Depression.
Just one quick follow and then turn to James. Do undocumented workers get federal Medicaid benefits?
No, this is, it depends on the state is the more complicated answer, but a lot of what they're attempting to ban, frankly, already doesn't exist in law. So, the idea that 13.7 million Americans, almost 14 million Americans are going to lose their benefits and that it's all illegals and all waste, most Americans understand intuitively that's just BS.
So, Congressman, let's start by talking about mortgage rates, over 7%.
Over 7%. Yeah.
Walk us through how this legislation were to pass as it stands right now. Now, it'll get changed, but let's just assume that that happens. What would that do to mortgage rates? And explain to our listeners and viewers how their bill would adversely affect the price of borrowing money.
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that because, you know, sometimes this can sound to most voters, most of my neighbors in Northeast Philly, a pretty blue-collar, middle-class area. They hear about deficit and debt, and it sounds like some abstract DC argument.
Right.
Practically, here's what happens. Our debt is now so high, and this bill makes it dramatically worse. So international investors, which is where we get most of our debt financing from, they say, whoa, wait a minute. The United States has the highest debt level since World War II. It's projected now to get much worse. Now, all three credit agencies have downgraded the debt and the credit of the United States. Hey, boys, guess what? We need a little bit more in return, a higher yield for issuing you this debt, because we no longer have 100% confidence you'll be able to repay it. It's kind of like, as a country, imagine that we had an 820 credit score. Well, now the international markets and the credit agencies are saying, United States, you're more like a 720, 730. We're going to want a higher interest rate from you guys if we're going to give you this debt. And that gets passed on to the consumer. So we're already seeing it in the mortgage rates where they have spiked back up over 7%. We're seeing it in auto loan rates. We're seeing it in personal loan rates, credit cards especially. I don't know if you saw the report last month that delinquencies on credit cards have really jumped up and are at a worrying level. So this is a terrible bill on policy, both in terms of the people it's going to throw off their health care, and then also what it's going to do in terms of interest rates for pretty much every American.
So I'm in a focus group in Northeast Philly. And I said, you know, they're cutting this. By the time they get all the goddamn illegals and you know, people who could work that are not working, just sitting there with government benefits and tax on all of us and the corruption that goes on, why can't we cut this and get rid of all this and have Medicaid a program for, like, real Americans like us? And how bad a problem is this? Illegals or waste, fraud, abuse or work requirements? Or you hear all that stuff.
Yeah.
What's your kind of reaction?
So first, James, I can tell you spent time in Northeast Philly because you absolutely sound like one of my neighbors. Believe me, and I wouldn't be here without all the door knocking I did as a candidate. So, you know, God bless the people where I'm from. And I say this as a proud born and raised Philadelphian. We ain't shy. They will tell you at the doorstep exactly what is on their mind. I want to make this clear, and this is where maybe I strike a different tone than some in our party. I am proudly for work. I believe, actually, in real work requirements on a number of our programs. I grew up in a working class household, a row home in Philly, where my dad routinely worked 60 hours a week. I think with work, it's not just about a paycheck, it's about a work ethic, and you pass that along to your kids through, as Mary Cuomo once said, the eloquence of your example. So as someone who believes that government can be a force for good in society and can create more opportunities for people and make a more equal society, I actually get pretty pissed off and offended by someone who's cheating the system or defrauding the system because they make it bad for the overwhelming majority of people who are doing it the right way, and they make it bad for folks like us who actually want to use government for some good. The artifice of the Republicans' argument is that these are real work requirements. A lot of these programs already have work requirements. Most of the Medicaid expansion population was the working poor. It's the folks who are working 40 hours a week at Walmart and don't have health care, but were making too much money to qualify for traditional Medicaid. Those are the kind of people who were helped through the Medicaid expansion that happened a decade ago that came in with Obamacare. What Republicans are really pushing aren't real work requirements. They're paperwork requirements. And we already saw this play out in Arkansas a few years ago. You might remember Arkansas instituted some of these actual paperwork requirements. And what was found? A lot of people lost their Medicaid who actually were working and completely legitimately qualified. Those were the people who were punished because it was just a creative, ingenious, deceptive way to kick people off Medicaid.
So, I mean, everybody has their own examples. In my own family, I have five sisters. My mother had dementia for over 4 years. They took care of her every day. Meanwhile, I was going around the country giving paid speeches. Well, you think their work is worthy of respect as giving corporate speeches is? I would say a lot more. I'd say if you have somebody taking care of an elderly person, God damn it, let's help this person. They're working. They're contributing to society. They're saving us money. They're keeping that person out of, you know, exorbitant nursing home fees that cost. What the hell is work? And then when you come back and tell me what it is, I can tell you if we should have a work requirement. But yeah, I think people who care for children and care for elderly people are frankly working their asses off.
Oh, boy. And I mean, a tough job. And a lot of times, I mean, I saw it with my grandmother who unfortunately had dementia her last 5 years of her life. Her caregiver ended up being my late mother. And I think part of the reason why my mom didn't take care of her own health and died pretty quickly at 61 was because it was so grueling to be a caregiver to an older adult who has dementia. So a lot of times these caregivers are getting no money or little money and actually getting a lot of abuse from the older patient who is, you know, unfortunately in those final stages. Last point I do want to make on this, because you just reminded me of something important. Medicaid today, and I remember this when I was first a state legislator over a decade ago, Medicaid today pays for so many of our older relatives who are in those nursing homes. The way Medicaid was brought about in 1965 and who it covered in the 1960s and 1970s versus who Medicaid covers today, it's really an apples to oranges conversation.
Hey, Albert.
Let's talk politics, something you know a lot about, and the political impact of this bill. You, for instance, in Pennsylvania, have three Republican colleagues who won in 2024 by less than 2%, two percentage points, with Kamala Harris on top of the ticket. They're going to have to run in 26 with Josh Shapiro on top of the ticket. Will this vote affect them?
So I'm going to say two things. First, I will do, and I've been doing everything I can to fight this awful bill from becoming law because it's such bad policy and will harm people. Second, if it does pass, I guarantee you right here and now, the Democrats will win back the House of Representatives, and the single biggest reason will be this vote. Make no mistake about it. As Yogi Berra said, it's deja vu all over again. This is just like 8 years ago in 2017 when Republicans went on their doomed quest to repeal and replace Obamacare, which blew up in their faces. I see the exact same, I mean, it's almost to the day, the exact same timeline. I was out on the Capitol steps last night at 1 a.m. speaking to a group that got here to protest the Medicaid cuts and the cuts to Obamacare. I tell you, you just watch out. And for those three Republicans who barely won the last time when they had help at the top of the ticket, they are in real trouble. If the election were held today, I think we win at least two of the three seats. And I feel pretty confident we'll win all three.
Damn, that makes it hard to know what to cheer for, Brendan. I mean, it really is.
Sometimes I look at the shoulder on my left, Al, and then sometimes I listen to I look at my shoulder on the right, and I got an angel on one side telling me one thing and a devil on the other side telling me the other. So,
I read somewhere that they have snuck some extraneous provisions into this bill that, you know, might limit courts and things like that. Are there a couple, you know, for lack of a better term, hookers like that in this huge bill?
There are a couple really rich ones. One is they repeal the, and stop for a second and just imagine who you think this might appeal to. They fully repeal the tax on indoor tanning. So I think we know, maybe someone at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue who is a fan of tanning. I joke that we should call that the Trump tax repeal that is very favorable to the tanning industry.
Don't leave out Robert Kennedy either.
We also have a provision in there that has gotten very little notice and attention, but is very important. It has nothing to do with the budget, and I'm hoping it'll be stripped out in the Senate by the Byrd rule, because it should. It doesn't meet the requirements of reconciliation. But there's a provision in there, a 10-year ban, that would prevent states from regulating AI, especially as it relates to children. I got to tell you, I mean, I have an 11-year-old daughter. About a month, 6 weeks ago, was sitting next to her at the kitchen table. I noticed she was chatting with someone. It was an AI bot that she was having a conversation with like a real person. And she was explaining to me how exactly this works. Now, you know, I later had a conversation with her then and that, you know, I really wasn't comfortable with this and didn't want her to do it. My wife and I sat down and talked to her. Boy, it is, you know, it might not have been easy for either of my parents trying to raise me and my brother, both rambunctious. And with little money. But I do think for parents today and moving forward with AI, with social media, it is unlike any sort of pressures any previous generation of kids growing up have had to deal with. And truly, as a father, it worries me. So the idea that snuck into this bill is a provision that would prevent any state from regulating AI is disturbing and it's nefarious.
There have been multiple reports that your senator, John Fetterman, has basically checked out. Have you been with Senator, or you or the other members of the delegation, been with Senator Fetterman at meetings recently?
No, I haven't, although that's not unusual. I mean, back when I was in the state legislature, I kind of first learned 15 years ago that the House and Senate operate very independently and rarely have reason to interact one-on-one with one another. And then it's the same way here in Congress. And then also, you know, John is, even before the stroke and even before these latest reports, was very, you know, and is a guy who's very to himself. So it's not like, you know, to be candid, I mean, I've never had a bad relationship with him, but it's not like I was ever really interacting with him much at any point. So the fact that there hasn't been much interaction between me and him recently isn't any sort of a change.
Okay, now I'll turn it over to James, but first, the big question. The big question. Should the NFL ban the tush push?
So let me remind everyone, the Philadelphia Eagles are the defending Super Bowl champions. They kicked the asses of the Kansas City Chiefs in the Super Bowl there in New Orleans. every single team, all 32, you can tell what I'm really fired up by, by the way.
I can.
all 32 teams have attempted the Bush push. If it were so damn easy and a gimmick, every team would be able to use it successfully. So all of these other teams haven't been able to do it, haven't been able to perfect it the way the Eagles have. And now what do they want to do? They want to rig the rules just because the Eagles won the Super Bowl. It is the weakest bunch of BS. Any team that votes to change the rules should be ashamed of themselves. They're cowards. Beat the Eagles on the field. Stop trying to rig the system in a backroom deal.
James, I think he's riled up about this one. What do you think?
All right. I got a simple Pennsylvania question, and we'll never know it, but your opinion. If Harris would have picked Josh for vice president, would Bobby still have his Senate seat?
You know, it's interesting. So first, I mean, Kamala Harris lost Pennsylvania by about 1.7%. Bob Casey, on the other hand, who also lost, only lost by 0.2%.
Right.
Now, I'm a big fan of Josh. I think I'm the only person in America who has served in a legislature with both Josh Shapiro and Tim Walz. Okay. And I'm friends with both, still text both. Right. I think very highly of them.
Right.
Here's what I also think, though. I felt this way 8 years ago when I got a lot of questions at that point about the 2016 Democratic primary. We right now are in this war to save healthcare for tens of millions of Americans. And I am literally in this every minute, every hour, every day, including in the middle of the night. It would be almost self-indulgent of me to distract from that and what the Republicans are doing, to relitigate any past election, because guess what? The results aren't going to change. I mean, I could sit here and tell you, you know, maybe Al Gore should have spent more time in New Hampshire. Maybe Humphrey should have broken from Johnson earlier than October 1968 on the war. There are all sorts of alternate histories I could go through, but none of that, zero of it, is going to help us win back the House in 2026 and win the White House in 2028.
So I have a little bit different view. When an airplane crashes, no one says, well, fuck it, let's just move on. Okay, but let's talk about how to make aviation safe in the future. No, let's find out why it did.
Yeah.
All right, we spent somewhere between two and a half and $3 billion in this cycle. And now the catalyst has come out. We didn't get a single vote we were not getting on Labor Day. So shouldn't we go back and look and see how we deployed those resources and how we can do it more effectively, I can be better? Or should we just say, well, hell, that's water under the bridge. Let's move on to 2020.
No, we're talking about two slightly different things.
Okay.
So,
all right.
I mean, I started off 20 years ago running for state house, putting everything I had into it. I was, you know, running against a guy who had won by 40 points the previous election. No one thought I had a shot. Turns out they're right. I lost, but ended up actually coming close enough that that's what set me up to ultimately win the seat. But I was devastated when I lost. But one of the most important things I did the Saturday after the election, I sat down with the yellow legal pad and I really thought very critically about everything I did wrong. Stuff that, God, I spent time on this and it turns out that really wasn't worth anything. And I really should have spent more time here. I should have done this. I should have done that. So while it was fresh in my mind, I immediately wrote those lessons learned. And I still have that piece of paper, by the way. And I encourage anyone who's gone through something and they haven't been successful to immediately, brutally be honest with yourself and explore it and examine it so you can get better for the next time. What I'm talking about that I don't think is helpful are all the kind of what ifs or alternate histories. That's the kind of thing that I just refuse to engage with because, let's face it, it becomes an internally divisive Democratic debate. And frankly, this is a point where we need to be all united, focused on what Republicans are doing in the here and now. Let's be careful to not be the general who's fighting the last battle.
All right. Well, I'm going to have a real tough question for you. And that is this. Do you think my fellow LSU grad Aaron Nola can get his mojo back because he's getting roughed up a little bit so far this year?
Yeah, I'm happy that the Phillies are in first place in the NL East at the moment. Although, as we've seen, you know, especially the last couple of years, it depends on who's hot at the end. The Phillies got some bad news with you know, a reliever who took some weight loss medication and now suddenly is out for half the season, banned, and will be out for the postseason. So it'll be fun. I love all sports, and the fact that, you know, the Eagles are doing so well, the fact the Phillies are doing so well, it's very different from when I was growing up and all my teams were losing. So I just enjoy it. I'll also say this about LSU. I have them in my preseason top five, James. I think that this is a make or break year for Brian Kelly.
And I think it, you know, you got to play, but I think top five is maybe justified. But, you know, we'll open at Clemson. We're 3-point underdog opening game. So, but I'm pretty optimistic.
Where do you have the
one
do you have
question? Were you in the vet when they booed Santa Claus? Were you booing Santa Claus?
Let me tell you. So that happened a decade before I was born.
Oh, okay.
You think and you can... every time Philadelphia sports team, especially the Eagles, is on TV, there is some damn sports announcer who brings it up. I am so sick and tired of hearing Santa and Snowball. There's actually been a documentary done on the incident. This is... And do you know, by the way, you got Al, especially a long career in journalism, you'll appreciate this. This was, late 1960s. It had gone unnoticed, happened to Franklin Field. It actually predates the vet. But then Howard Cosell had a very popular late night. I think it was the Sports Machine, he called it. And Howard Cosell gets on. And can you believe what Eagles fans did? They even booed Santa Claus. And then, you know, I've never stopped hearing about it the rest of my life.
Well, Congressman, I will tell you, my brother, who was an Eagles season ticket holder, claims he was there at the game when a couple got married on the Jumbotron at halftime and the fans started to bark as in, she's a dog. And so I think that's true. But anyway.
I will say I am a proud Philly sports fan. And when it comes to this topic, I'm like the Japanese soldier on that island in 1985. Yeah, I will still be there standing up for my Philly sports teams and my fellow fans.
You're a wit without man.
But you're having a great time between your Philadelphia teams other than the 76ers and your Notre Dame Fighting Irish. So we hope you have as much luck in the legislative process these next couple of days, because you've stood up to what is truly an atrocious bill, and we thank you so much for being on our show tonight.
Yeah, man, thank you.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it, as always. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Bye. Enjoy summer style with Quince. Oh, how would you like to look really good and not pay a lot for it? It seems like a pretty good deal to me.
No, I think that's right. Because you know the feeling when a new shirt just becomes your go-to. That's what happened when you pick up a new piece from Quince. They're the first thing you reach for in the closet. It's always lightweight, comfortable, and the style is always on point. Quince has all the things you actually want to wear, like organic cotton silk polos, European linen beach shorts, and comfortable pants that work for everything from backyard hangs to nice dinners. The best part? Everything with Quince is priced 50 to 80% less than what you'd find at similar brands. Now, by working directly with top artisans and cutting out the middlemen, Quince gives you luxury pieces without the crazy markups. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. After checking them out, we think everyone needs Quince's extra fine Australian Merino Polo. There's nothing better for looking your best as the weather warms up. And if you're prioritizing fitness going into the summer, there's no better workout motivation than some new activewear. The style is perfect for getting things done on the hill, reading in a recliner, or heading off to exciting cities and new places. Elevate your closet with Quince. Go to quince.com/warroom for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/warroom to get free shipping and 365-day returns again. Quince. Patreon.com/war room. And the link is also in our show notes. Hey, James, now for the outrages of the week. There's no appointment in this administration that shocks anymore. Still, the reported plan to nominate Justice Department hitman Emil Bove to the Third Circuit U.S. Court of Appeals is really shameful. Bove was one of Trump's lawyers in the Manhattan criminal case. You know, they lost. And currently is a top Justice Department official. He was a prosecutor earlier. His most significant, actually nefarious, role was in leading the conditional pardon of the criminally indicted New York City Mayor Eric Adams. This was a quid pro quo scam. We'll let you, Adams, off the hook if you'll help Trump on his migrant deportations. The acting U.S. attorney for the Southern District, Danielle Sassoon, refused to go along with this sleazy deal and resigned. Lest anyone thinks that's because she's a lefty, she's a member of the Federalist Society and clerk for Justice Antonin Scalia. Her difference with Bove, she believes in the rule of law. Five other Justice Department officials also refused to go along with this outrage and resigned. Bove had to take the case himself to get the Adams indictment dismissed. The reward will put Bove on the Court of Appeals, a lifetime job. Bove really looks and acts like the notorious Roy Cohn, minus about 30 IQ points.
Okay. So people that follow American politics and particularly Democratic politics should be ecstatic, should be aglow about what has happened recently in Arizona. I can barely remember. I can remember Senator DeConcini and I guess Governor Jen Napolitano. I think she was in the Clinton administration before she was governor. But that's about it. So we don't do any. Arizona has never been a very bright spot for Democrats until like today. I have a Democratic governor and two Democratic senators. So I'm going to read to you an article from New York Times by a journalist who did a good job by the name of Kellen Browning. It seems a very experienced guy. And I'm going to read you verbatim from this story. Angered by Mr. Trump's victory, the Democrats installed a new party chairman, Robert Branscombe, an insurance company owner who had been a vice chair. Mr. Branscombe soon began clashing with staff members over personnel choices and accused them of sabotaging him by withholding financial documents. Mr. Branscombe, who declined to comment for this article, wrote party members detailing infighting and attacking Senators Ruben Gallego and Mark Kelly, both Democrats. You know what they did? They sat in the back seat of a car all night driving from Yuma to Tucson to raise money. Well, you didn't do anything. Both Senator Gallego and Senator Kelly ran. They got elected. You ain't been elected to shit, so why don't you shut up? And that's the problem with these people from the, quote, progressive, unquote, whatever the fuck that is, that come into these state parties that didn't do anything, that have outstanding Democratic elected officials fighting with the governor. We finally had a Democratic governor. And this guy exemplifies to me what's wrong with that wing of the party. And in the story, Mr. Branscombe says, I will not be coerced. I will not be silenced. Well, why don't you just shut up anyway, because you haven't gotten elected to anything? And why don't you pay attention and work for the people that are out there who are not just trying to win elections, but are actually winning elections? And you see this in these state parties. Look at what they did in Nevada. One of the most successful state parties in the history of the United States. Democratic senators, we always had Democratic governors until now. The majority of female state legislature, they took over the party, which had turned it into a useless glob of nothing. And once Democrats understand, you got one goal, dude, that's to win elections, not run your jackass mouth, which is all this guy Branscombe is good for. And we got to go to these people, and they need to really consider whether they're Democrats or not. Maybe they ought to go join the pronoun justice, social, I don't know, equity party or whatever they do it. But when you don't respect people who go out and win elections and work and put their names out front and dare to lose, then you don't have, there's no use for you in Democratic politics. That's my view. Protect yourself online with Delete Me. Well, if you don't understand how important that is, then you're stupid. Okay, and I don't think anybody that listens to this
you're
program.
You're Christy Noem.
Yeah, but I don't think there's a single person that visits this doesn't know the ills that come from data breaches of people breaking into your private data. So I'm not even going to try to sell our viewers how important this is, because I know they already know it's important, but I think it's important that they know this product is there and is available to help you.
Right, because Delete Me makes it easy, quick, and safe to remove your personal data online at a time when surveillance and data breaches are common enough to make everyone vulnerable. With every passing day, more online partisans and nefarious actors are joining the hunt to find or steal this data. Then they use it to target political rivals, civil servants, and even outspoken citizens posting their opinions online. Your personal financial details, address, and more are at risk. That's why we're so glad we found Delete Me. With Delete Me, you can protect your personal privacy or the privacy of your business from doxing attacks before sensitive information can be exploited. As public figures, always knew we could be targets for scammers and worse. But when we found out how many Americans are compromised and at the mercy of criminals, we wanted to fight back. With Delete Me, you'll feel so much better about your security. More importantly, as family men, we know Delete Me is something that can keep our loved ones safe. Join us and refuse to be a victim. Start protecting your privacy with Delete Me. So don't wait. Take control of your data and keep your private life private by signing up for Delete Me. Now at a special discount for our listeners. Today, you'll get 20% off your Delete Me plan by texting War Room to 64000 64000. The only way to get 20% off is to text War Room to 64000. That's War Room to 64000. Message and data rates may apply. The link also is in our show notes. All right, James, now for our listener questions. Gordon in Norwood, Michigan. I think Gordon's a repeat questioner, which we really encourage. He says, help me understand why Democrats I really like Gallego, Booker, and Slotkin are supporting crypto.
I think that crypto is big enough, we've got to think of some way to regulate it. I mean, I would buy the shit. People, our friends like Roger Altman and them, say they don't know what it's about. I see where Jamie Dimon said J.P. Morgan Chase would allow their customers to buy crypto. Maybe, for all I know, somebody have some of it, but I don't know that. Why I'm supposed to be outraged by it, I guess, would be my question.
Yeah, I don't know enough to be. My instinct is that bill's bad, but that's just an instinct. I really don't know. You know, I like Cory Booker. I thought his 25-hour talkathon, whatever have you, really worked. But he did something really bad this week. He voted for Charles Kushner to be ambassador to France. There really are few people sleazier than Charles Kushner, as Chris Christie could tell you when he indicted him. What Charles Kushner did was he went and ordered to try to intimidate his brother-in-law. He set him up with a hooker. He had a hidden camera in there, and then he sent the action to his sister, the brother-in-law's wife, in addition to income tax evasion and everything else. To vote for this man to be ambassador to France, I'm sorry, Cory Booker. I like you. You're a good senator, but that was really a terrible vote.
Give him credit. He raised that ethical giant, Jared.
That's true. Okay, I take it back. Kay in Hilton Head, South Carolina, says, are we experiencing a shortage of bad folks to deport? You know, this is the plan all along. They said they were going to deport, what was it, James, 1 million people. They never were going to do that. They would have brought down all kinds of industries and wreaked economic havoc. So what they're doing, they're looking for really well-publicized actions where they can
go and round up people. They don't care about habeas corpus, if you will. They don't care about the rule of law. They're actually thugs, and they will send them whether there's a justification for it or not. And the TV cameras and everything will cover it. And in the end, they're going to deport just a fraction of what they say they're going to deport because they're looking upon this as an issue. And they don't really care about whether people have rights or not.
Well, I said on television last night, and I'll repeat it here. So they arrested this congressman from New Jersey. I'm just going to say flat out, I think the fact that she was black has something to do with it. I think these people are failing on every front. High mortgage rates, declined economy, no growth, exploding deficits, decline in dollar, you name it. You name it. It's all going to hell in a handbasket. And our answer is let's go out and arrest a black person. This is that disgusting. The whole thing. And you know, all the research says that the immigrants, actually people that are born here, commit a lot less crime than the people that are born here.
Well, James, we're arresting black people while we're letting white Afrikaners
come into the country
as opposed to us. But you know, there's not a racist element in this administration. No, of course not.
We're living a post-racial world. Don't we all understand that?
James, Paul, and your hometown. No, well, you know, it says New Orleans, California. That's got to be a misprint. We got to talk to Dan about that. I don't think it's in New Orleans, California.
I don't think so either. But
so okay.
You want to claim us? Go ahead.
I'm going to assume it's Louisiana. It says, waiting for the next election is political suicide. Dems need to pick their candidate right now. Thoughts, James?
Well, let me break this to you gently. How would that work?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I appreciate the thought. There's some kind of thing that there's some Democratic Party that controls things and can do whatever it wants, and it kind of doesn't work like that, but thank you for your question.
Good try, Paul.
Yeah.
Brian in New York City says, do you think that New York has seen enough corruption and mismanagement with Eric Adams that the city will finally elect a morally competent mayor? Brian, I doubt it. The front runner is Andrew Cuomo. I don't think he meets that classification. It's going to be. I don't have any idea who the other candidates are right now, but I hope. I'm not optimistic.
Well, I think what Adams is done, if you, and I know it's just an indictment, but you have a tendency to look at that indictment and just what you kind of know about the guy and the way he conducts himself. I don't think it's very cool that he's leading the most important city in the world. I really don't.
Yeah, you're right.
I don't know. Andrew's got issues. I don't know how corrupt or self-dealing it is. I don't know that. But, man, these cities are looking for mayors who can, really govern and apparently he can't, just like the guy in San Francisco couldn't. We got a good new mayor there. I'm here in Chicago. I don't think this mayor is the most highly thought of person along the banks of Lake Michigan, but we'll see. But, people don't like this lackadaisical progressive governance, as you see.
Jim, out in Los Angeles, James, wants to know. Now, wait a minute. I think I may have mixed up my order here because what question did I just ask you? I'm having a bad day, aren't I? No, I'm doing okay. We talked about Andrew Cuomo and Eric Adams. So now we're going to move to California. And Jim out there wants to ask you, he said he was watching Pete Buttigieg on the Flagrant podcast. I don't know the Flagrant podcast, but they're young men who humor the MAGA right. They love Bernie. They beg Pete for three specific policies to mirror build the wall. Concrete. He couldn't do it. Just a 5-minute word slop about values or something. Why are Democrats so afraid of clear statements about what they'll get done on issues like that?
I think they can speak in clearer terms. I don't know if this is like the best example, but I think the Democrats just need to now settle on a framework that what we're trying to do is help people that are trying to make it. What they're trying to do is protect people that already have made. And to go through this and that, I specifics of what he said, I don't know. I find a lot of these kind of left-wing things that be pretty ridiculous sometimes, but I don't know.
Yeah, no, you know, I think you're right. And then, you know, the next question is coming in from Cole in Huntsville, Alabama, who says, is the Senate map in 2006 that bad, or is there any chance the Democrats could pick up seats? Actually, Cole, first, the map is not great, but there is a chance that they could pick up seats. I think they have a good chance in North Carolina and Maine. You know, it all depends on candidates. If they could get good candidates, I think they would have a shot in Iowa and even Ohio. And don't forget Texas. I mean, Ken Paxton, the ethically criminally challenged Attorney General, is running 10 points ahead of the incumbent senator. That's going to be a bitter primary, and a good Democratic candidate, I know that's it, this seems like a pipe dream, a good Democratic candidate conceivably could win in Texas. So, Cole, don't give up. I think there's a chance the Democrats could pick up, you know, as many as even three or four seats next time.
I would rank Mississippi higher than Ohio, Iowa, or Texas, and I think we're going to have a good candidate there, and I think that's a real possibility. You know, every statewide race that we've run here recently has gotten 47.5 or better. And we're not that far away. And if the right candidate, which I think we got in Scott Collum, pay attention to him. And she's weak, no doubt about that. So we got Pence asked, if, you know, some outside shot at Florida. Don't know, but it's pretty outside, really outside in Louisiana. Don't forget Alaska. Don't forget Alaska. Pertol came within 1 point, you know, of winning. So that's another place. But you're going to have to hit. You're going to have to draw to some places like this. I think the most important event coming up on the 2026 map is actually the Virginia governor's race in 2025. And as I say, we're going to win it. But if we win it big and we put a real effort in there, we'll be going to be able to recruit the final good candidates we need. And remember, in Iowa and Ohio, I'm told, reliably, we have really good gubernatorial candidates, which that should help the atmospherics and recruiting kind of top-tier senatorial candidates. So I think if we win in Virginia, a lot of good things are going to happen to us on Senate recruitment.
John in Gurnee, Illinois, James, wants to know what you think of DNC Chair Ken Martin's new slogan to organize everywhere in order to try to win everywhere.
You know, I like the guy. I've talked to him on the phone a couple of times. It's a very impossible job. I never understood. So does this mean we're going to spend as much money per capita in Idaho as we're going to spend in Georgia? I don't quite know what all this means. And I remember Howard Dean had the 50-state strategy.
Right.
Now, if you're the chairman of the party, you got Democratic from Idaho and Wyoming and, you know, low-performing Democratic states. And, you know, I guess you got to do something for them too. But I don't know what, I don't understand the 50-state strategy. Somebody got to have to explain it to me.
Well, I think that's right. Listen, those questions every week just get better and better and better. And if I seem to get lost in occasion, it's because you have to pick and choose from so many good ones. If you didn't get to yours this week, please send it in for next week because we'll try to get to it then. So thank you so much. Hey, thanks for listening to Politics War Room with James Carville, and I'm Al Hunt. As always, send your questions for us by email to politicswarroom@gmail.com or tweet them for next week's show at Politicon. Following this episode, we'd really appreciate it if you check out the links to our sponsors, Faye Nutrition, Quince, and Delete Me in our episode show notes. We thank you for supporting them because when you do, you help make this podcast happen. Now, to keep up with us, subscribe to Politics War Room on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. And check out our Substack at politicswarroom.com. James and I are constantly adding new content, so go take a look. You also can find other shows you might enjoy in the Politicon YouTube channel or when you search Politicon on your favorite podcast sites. Remember, please rate the show with a 5-star review. We'll be back next week with another show as we continue our War Room planning.
Into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.